Welcome to the Crown Council Mentor of the Month program. This is Steve Anderson. From time to time, it's instructive to take a look at where we've been, to understand where we are, and where we're going. A quote attributed to philosopher George Santayana says, "When experience is not retained, as among savages, infancy is perpetual. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." End quote. People, businesses, and industries go through cycles and phases. Over the last 60 or so years, dentistry has moved through four very distinct phases or generations, driven by different types of patient values and patient motivations. But as much as dentistry has progressed, there is as much of history that is alive and living with us today as it was historical in the past. For the last several years, I've shared a retrospective of dentistry that helps us understand where dentistry has been, where it is today, and where it might be going. But as historical as this retrospective might be, it is current as well in different practices. It's what I call the four generations of dental care. We hope you'll listen carefully to the past as we go through it, but listen as well for the present, because many of the vestiges of the past are alive and well in practices today, and where you are today very well may determine your destination in the future. Those who see the phases and understand the trends are better equipped to succeed in the future. With that, the four generations of dental care. Back to the 50s, the first generation. Around the 1940s, 50s, and even in the early 60s, dentistry was primarily a problem-focused industry. Patients went to the dentist when they had a problem, when they were in pain. If it was broken, they wanted it fixed. If it hurt, they wanted out of pain. They went to the dentist for a solution. Once they had their solution, they went happily along their way, never to return again until they had another problem. In World War II, dentistry in the U.S. military was problem-focused. My own father was almost court-martialed from the Army over a dental problem, or lack thereof, as the case was. He was ordered to the military dentist early on in officer candidate school, as all soldiers were. The dentist was going to take his wisdom teeth out, and my dad refused, saying that they weren't causing any problems. He returned to his barracks only to be summoned by his commanding officer, who inquired why he had refused to obey orders from a superior. Puzzled, he replied that he had no idea what he was talking about. His commanding officer informed him that he had heard back from the military dentist that Dad had refused to have his wisdom teeth out, a decision by a superior officer. Either you obey orders, or you'll be court-martialed. When my dad said that they were not causing him any problems, his commanding officer said, "They will." Taking out wisdom teeth early stemmed from the idea that they were usually a problem. They came in crooked, they crowded, and they were hard to clean. They usually just cause problems, so get rid of them. The Army didn't want the problem, especially down the road in a combat situation, so they just got rid of them. We're still doing it today. Even though problems are not the only driver in dentistry anymore, you still have patients who are stuck in what we call the first generation of dentistry. They only come in when there's a problem. You see them about every 4 or 5 years. They call only when they're in pain or when something breaks. You solve their problem, and you'll see them again in 4 or 5 years when they have another problem. It's tempting to think that first-generation patients aren't very good patients because they call spur of the moment, they want to come in now, and they don't repeat very often. Many practices are not very accommodating or understanding, yet first-generation patients are a great opportunity for filling unscheduled treatment time or appointment times of patients who have canceled. They're great opportunities for same-day treatment, and they're great opportunities for converting them into more frequent patient visits by just adding a little bit of education. You can take advantage of first-generation patient opportunities by, 1, pre-blocking for emergencies, 2, making it easy for them to get in today, 3, accommodating new patients who are emergencies, and 4, not judging, but helping them get what they need when they need it. While the first-generation patient may be something left over from the 50s and 60s in terms of dental health values, there are still some of them with us today. Don't neglect them, judge them, or turn them away. Meet them where they are today, exceed their expectations, and help them move forward toward lifetime care, and you'll be amazed at how many of them you can convert into happy, paying patients who repeat and refer. A shift in thinking, the second generation. In the late 60s and early 70s, a dentist emerged on the scene who introduced a new philosophy of care that fundamentally changed how many dentists thought about the practice of dentistry and how they approached their patients. Dr. Robert Bob F. Barclay was one of the first dentists to lay out a philosophy of comprehensive care that focused on diagnosis and prevention instead of just repair and replace when a problem shows up. His philosophy was to diagnose the condition and prevent a more serious problem. The second generation of dentistry was born. As his ideas spread throughout dentistry, the nature of the practice of dentistry started to change as well. Instead of just being a place where patients came to get out of pain and fix a problem, the dentist started to become a place where a condition could be identified and treated before it became a more serious, painful problem. Hygiene schedules started to fill with patients who now understood that if they could control the spread of disease, they could prevent more serious problems from occurring down the road. And the timing could not have been more perfect for the business of dentistry. As the use of fluoride became more prevalent and the incidence of decay started to diminish, prevention came on the scene to pick up the slack. Appointments to just fill cavities were replaced with appointments to maintain and improve the hygiene condition in the mouth and prevent and ward off the problems associated with periodontal disease. It became the habit of many patients to go to the dentist regularly to prevent serious problems while maintaining some of the existing problems they already had. In other words, while unscheduled restorative treatment abounded in the charts of many patients, they would show up regularly for their recare or continuing care appointment. It seemed that everyone in America was getting the message that you had to get your teeth cleaned on a regular basis in order to stay healthy. Today, many dental practices are predominantly filled with second-generation patients. They come in regularly for their hygiene visit. They may not have completed all their restorative care, but they continue coming back for hygiene. The average practice today will have 60% of the patient base that qualifies as second-generation patients. Unfortunately, there are too many dentists that view hygiene as a loss leader, something they have to do, but not a very productive part of the practice. Nothing could be further from the truth. Second-generation patients present great opportunities for same-day treatment, filling unfilled restorative time, and converting hygiene patients into restorative treatment. You can take advantage of second-generation opportunities by, 1, reviewing the charts of your hygiene patients the day before for needed but unscheduled treatment, 2, discussing those patients and their needs in your morning meeting, 3, choosing two hygiene patients each day to discuss their goals, condition, and needed treatment, and 4, helping those patients find an easy way to move forward with the next level of treatment. Second-generation patients make up the biggest opportunity for most practices. They are the most plentiful source of repeat and referral business for any practice. So just think of every day in your practice like a scene out of That 70s Show, that 60% of your patient base that keeps coming back for preventative dentistry. Those second-generation patients like you, they believe you, and they trust you. They are the best opportunity a practice has for generating more patients to come in to the practice and the best opportunity for doing treatment today. The golden age of dentistry. Cosmetic dentistry comes of age in the third generation. Ironically, what most call the golden age of dentistry has little, if anything, to do with gold, but everything to do with porcelain. As technology and materials evolved in the late 80s and early 90s, it became obvious that dentistry could make teeth that looked as good or better than the original. What's more, this emergence of technology converged with a very powerful demographic trend, the maturing of the baby boom generation into middle age. And when you have two very powerful trends converge, you get an explosion. Born right after World War II, the baby boom generation has redefined every age of life through which they've traveled. A whole new industry was created around baby care when they were infants. They redefined music and morals in their teens and 20s. Ambition and earning in their late 20s and 30s with new terms like yuppie and upwardly mobile. And when they hit midlife, in the highest income earning years between ages 45 and 55, they were determined to look good and feel good, and they had the money to spend on it. Dentistry was uniquely positioned to accommodate, and the third generation of dental care was born. Third-generation patients are characteristically focused on aesthetics. It's all about the look. Many, if not most, have done their research and have come and become somewhat educated on the treatment options of veneers, orthodontics, whitening, and more. To them, a beautiful smile is a status symbol and a sign of sophistication. They view a beautiful smile as a key to attraction when it's right, and a big distraction when it's wrong. They usually know what they want. They're just trying to find the right person that they will trust to do it. Third-generation patients are seekers. They're usually actively looking for what they want. They'll talk to friends and coworkers about their preferences in appearance and providers. They'll search online for options, opinions, and offices. And when they arrive, they're evaluating you, your office, and whether or not they'll trust you with their smile. Once you've won them over, they'll be ready to do the whole thing. Third-generation patients are attracted to practices that look the part. If they want to look good themselves, they're naturally attracted to a practice that is aesthetically appealing in design, with personnel and practitioners who look like they are products themselves of what the practice can produce for its patients. You can take advantage of third-generation patient opportunities by 1, taking a look around. Does your practice and its appearance look like a place where people would expect cosmetic-related procedures to be done? 2, are the personnel in the practice, including the doctor, examples of what cosmetic dentistry can do? 3, is the practice easy to find on the internet when it comes to cosmetic dentistry? Has your website been optimized for cosmetic-related procedures? And 4, does the practice look for opportunities daily to introduce cosmetic dentistry to qualified existing patients who might not have considered it previously? third-generation patients are looking for someone they can trust to make them look good and feel good. Have you made it obvious to your market and your patients that you are qualified and equipped to do that for them? Every day, there are patients looking for the best way to look good and feel good. You can attract third-generation patients by being positioned properly and actively looking for third-generation patient opportunities every day in your marketing and your existing patient base. The parts become a whole, the fourth generation of dental care. It's become common knowledge in science and medicine that it takes about 20 to 25 years for practical application to catch up with scientific discovery. Well before the 1990s, it became well known that there is an oral systemic link, that what's going on in the mouth is an indication of what's going on in the whole body. Studies now prove that the same bacteria that is at the root of periodontal disease has also been found in the specific areas affected in those with heart disease. Symptoms of diabetes show up in the mouth. Inflammation is the common cause of all that ails the body. While the science has continually been proving the connection for well over 25 years, the practical application of the science has been lagging until now. As it is with most scientific discoveries, it takes public opinion or demographic trends for it to really catch on. Just like the golden age of dentistry, when technology converged with the baby boomer generation reaching the age where they wanted to look good and they had the money to spend on it, another such convergence of science and demographics is underway. With baby boomers turning 65 years old at the rate of 10,000 per day in the United States alone, the consciousness of America is shifting from just aesthetics to the health and wellness of the whole person. Yes, it's great to look good, but genuinely feeling good is more than self-esteem and a reflection in the mirror. As baby boomers age, their concern about total health is increasing. In a recent study by the University of Massachusetts at Boston, 78% of patients surveyed viewed oral health as part of their overall health and want their dentist to address whole health issues. Ironically, these same patients said that only 51% of dentists are even addressing the correlation between what's going on in the patient's mouth and what's going on in his or her overall health. Patients are getting it. Are we? For example, dentistry has traditionally treated periodontal disease only after there is physical damage. For example, pocketing, bleeding, bone loss, etc. That's the equivalent of the physician telling a stage 1 cancer patient that they're going to watch it until there's physical damage or destruction before the cancer is treated. That would be crazy, but that's exactly what dentistry has done for decades. Wait, watch, and see. The shift to the fourth generation of dental care tells us that periodontal disease is first and foremost about biology, not just anatomy. The disease can be diagnosed and treated early before it causes physical damage. And that's the right thing to do for the overall health and the right thing to do for the overall patient. Dentistry is uniquely positioned to address the thing that is on most people's minds today. How can I stay healthy so I don't have to try to get healthy? When you combine that consumer trend with the science available today and the fact that there is no other healthcare provider that patients visit more often than the dentist, you have a very powerful combination for a very bright future in dentistry. The fourth generation patient, however, is not just interested in science and overall health, they're interested in being treated like a people, not like a patient or a disease. with the increasing depersonalization of medicine, there's a craving on the part of most people to be treated with a higher level of care, concern, and individuality, to be treated like a whole person, not like a problem, not like a condition, not like a case, but like a whole person who has needs, desires, wants, and aspirations. Fourth generation patients want a dentist who will listen and work with them, not just work on them. They want someone who will take an extra 3 minutes to get the picture of the whole person before they launch into their clinical diagnosis and treatment plan. Fourth generation patients want a practitioner who will take the latest science and address the health of the whole body, as well as remember that there's a person attached to the teeth, not just a body attached to the teeth. People have perceptions, priorities, and preferences. They want a treatment plan that addresses their clinical needs, as well as one that fits them as a person. Fourth generation dentistry is about keeping the whole person in mind, clinically, as well as personally. To take advantage of fourth generation dental care, ask yourself these questions. 1, what am I doing to address the connection between what is going on in my patients' mouths and what's going on with their overall health? 2, what am I doing to diagnose and treat disease at its earliest stages instead of waiting until there's physical damage before taking action to treat disease? And 3, what am I doing to really discover my patient's priorities and preferences so that I can provide a plan that fits them as an individual? Fourth generation dental care is about the whole body, and the whole person. The science is rapidly evolving, and it's allowing us to address whole health issues. Patient preferences have evolved to the point that patients want a practitioner who will address what the patient needs and wants, a practitioner who will treat the patient like a person, not a tooth. Welcome to the fourth generation of dental care. History, past, present, and future. The application. The goal of identifying the four generations of dental care is threefold. First, to identify where individual patient values are today so we can help them move forward. 2, to help where the practice is positioned in the market today so that we can consider where it needs to go in the future. And 3, to understand where the dentist is as a practitioner and what that means for the future of the practice. Let's take a look at each of these and the associated action plans for the patient, the practice, and the practitioner. Patients. For 15 years, my late business partner Walter Haley and I, along with a great faculty of dentists and team members, facilitated and presented the Dental Bootcamp Continuum up until his passing in 2003. The centerpiece of that training was the importance and power of asking, of getting to know the patient first, of being interested, not interesting. Those were and continue to be essential and powerful principles. Nearly 10 years ago, I had the opportunity to take a close look at what we were teaching and training. I looked into the laboratory of sorts to update, test, and see the relevance, to see what was still working and what wasn't. The result of that work was the birth of the Total Patient Service Institute, where we re-engineer the systems of the practice to meet the needs of today's patient. A key aspect of those systems is the principle that patients have different dental values that need to be identified early on in the patient relationship. All patients are not the same. They have different values and have to be approached differently if we expect to create a relationship that will last. The four generations of dental care helps us understand why some practices do a great job of retaining patients while others don't. In our research, one of the things that becomes apparent early on is that some dentists reach a point in their careers where their training and their expertise actually becomes a hindrance to practice growth instead of a help. That's because at a point in professional development, if you're not careful, you start expecting patients to meet you where you are instead of the other way around. In other words, you expect your patients to want the kind of dentistry that you know how to provide, and that the patient's not willing to submit to your high standards, then they're not worthy to be your patient. In saying that, please don't infer that I'm in any way suggesting that you compromise your standard of care. You are and have the professional and ethical responsibility to uphold a high standard of quality care. However, sometimes it's easy to forget that patients don't have all the education that you do. They're operating from a level of a dental IQ that they gained from their previous dental experience, and that's about it. They came to the practice with certain values and perceptions that are based on their experience. Our responsibility is to identify those values early on, meet the patient where he or she is at the outset, and then help him or her move forward to a higher level of care. To make the job of identifying patient values easier, we developed a model, a matrix, if you will, that points out the key characteristics patients have when it comes to their values so that we know where to start and where to go from there. A diagram of this matrix is posted for download with this recording at crowncouncil.org. Here's a description of it. Imagine a square where the left vertical represents no trust, and the right vertical represents trust. The upper horizontal boundary represents a high dental IQ, and the lower horizontal boundary represents a low dental IQ. So let's start in the lower left quadrant, where no trust and low dental IQ meet. Those two characteristics are the two main characteristics of a first-generation patient. They come to the dentist only when it hurts and when they have a problem. They just want to get out of pain and get out of the office, and you probably won't see them again until it hurts again. Next, move to the lower right quadrant where low dental IQ meets high trust. This is the second generation patient with whom you've built more trust, and because of that increase in trust, you've been able to educate them more. They've come to the understanding that good dental health comes from proper care and maintenance, including regular continuing care visits that will diagnose conditions before they become more serious problems. These are your good, loyal, regular hygiene patients. Continue on the upper left quadrant where low trust meets high dental IQ. This is the third generation patient who's identified more of what he or she wants, especially in the area of cosmetics, and is just searching for a practitioner that can be trusted to do the work. Finally, we move to the fourth quadrant in the upper right where high dental IQ meets high trust. The fourth generation patient who values you clinically because of your quality of care, trusts the relationship, and is a patient of lifetime care. It's the patient you can treat as a whole person, clinically, as well as personally. They value the care you provide and appreciate your high level of patient service that comes along with it. Now, with that simple diagram and the definitions that go along with it, you can identify where patients are today and where you can help them progress. With each of those values and characteristics, there are specific skill sets that go along with them if you expect to be able to move the patient to the next level of patient care. For example, first-generation patients require us to have a specific set of skills around identifying and addressing chief complaints. If all we do is fix the immediate problem, the patient's not likely to change their behavior in the future. He'll just keep on doing what what he's been doing. But when the problem is addressed with the right chief complaint skills that build trust, we give the patient an opportunity to change their behavior in the future. Second-generation patients require us to have a specific set of education skills. With more trust in the equation, the door is open to educate that patient to a higher level of care. Education, however, is rarely done effectively by telling. In fact, most patients check out mentally when we start telling. Instead, there's a specific set of education skills that will open the patient's mind, expand their vision of what's possible, and help them emotionally embrace a higher level of care. It all comes with the right education skills. Third-generation patients require a specific set of what we call priming skills. With potentially extensive work to be done, third-generation patients need a significant amount of trust built into the equation before they feel comfortable moving ahead. There's a specific set of skills built around that need. It doesn't just happen by accident. Finally, fourth-generation patients require a specific skill set around co-diagnosis and co-discovery. With high trust and a high dental IQ, the fourth-generation patient is in a unique position for us to work together for their total health and lifetime care. The bottom line of the four generations of dental care matrix is that different patients have different values, and that's okay. We can't expect them to progress unless we meet them where they are today and use the proper skill set to change their frame from where they are to where they could be. It all starts with us. We have to know how to identify where they are, how to employ the proper skill set, and then engage the patient in a journey that will help them move to the next level. All patients are different. When we recognize that fact and engage the right skills and training, treatment acceptance goes up and patient retention goes up with it. 2, the practice. There are all sorts of keys to success in dentistry, but there's one sure key to failure. Try to be everything to everyone. Just as there are different patients in different quadrants of patient care, practices tend to land in the different quadrants as well. Let's take a look at each of these and see how many of the characteristics apply to your practice. The first generation practice takes whatever it's dealt. This is the practice that hung out a shingle and hoped for the best. It's a practice that's happy for whatever type of patient that happens to walk through the door. With no real philosophy of care, it's the patients in a first generation practice that dictate treatment and the treatment plan. The practice is always in dire need of new patients because patient retention is very low. The recare percentage, which is the percentage of patients that come back to the practice at least every 6 months, is very low as well. Patients come in the front door and immediately go out the back door after one appointment. It's primarily a problem-focused practice, living primarily off the bottom 20% of the market that does not value dental care that much. Because of that, fees become a big issue. A first-generation practice is always worried about its fee structure and if it's inexpensive enough. The second-generation practice has more of an emphasis on taking care of patients' oral health. It's a practice that will insist on a complete exam and taking care of the patient's hygiene needs. It will focus on keeping the hygiene schedule full and trying to do the right thing for the patient. Restoratively, the practice will focus on the needs of the patient or diagnosing what the obvious needs are. But without a lot of good verbal skills, the practice is filled with crown-of-the-year patients who only do what their insurance will cover. The third-generation practice has a core focus on cosmetic dentistry. It's positioned itself as the place where the patient can have the smile of his or her dreams. The practice has done a lot of work positioning itself and marketing to the appearance-motivated patient. A third-generation practice will have 80% or more of its production coming from cosmetic and restorative dentistry with less emphasis on hygiene. It will have spent more time on case presentation and verbal skills and taking advantage of every patient opportunity possible. Average case size will be much larger, and the practice depends on those last few cases every month in order to make a profit. The fourth-generation practice has taken a balanced approach to practice development, working on a solid clinical philosophy of care, management systems, and case presentation and verbal skills. Its goal is to address the whole patient, not just the patient's teeth. It starts by trying to understand where the patient is coming from and what the patient perceives to need. It has the systems in place to engage the patient in comprehensive dentistry and lifetime care. It addresses whole health issues and the individual goals of the patient. It is very keyed into continuing care and making sure the short and long-term desires of the patient are met. So just as there are patients in each of the four quadrants, practices tend to land more strongly in one or more of the quadrants as well. Where does your practice land? Is it there by design or by default? Where do you want to be? And what can you do to move it in the direction you want to be? Third, the practitioner. Dentists themselves tend to land in one of the four quadrants of dental care as well. Since the practice is driven by the dentist, the practice and the patients tend to follow the dentist's lead. The first generation dentist does what he or she can to get by. With little or no purposeful continuing education since dental school, the first generation dentist does what obviously needs to be done, but doesn't diagnose much more than the clear problems that are bothering the patient. The first-generation dentist is usually the first one to point to the economy as the problem for poor practice performance, and the first to always complain about bad patients, bad patient behavior, and how hard dentistry is as a profession. Second-generation dentists have done more to develop a clinical philosophy of care and to put systems in place to educate patients about what's possible. They've learned how to do more quadrant dentistry and how to get patients to accept more than just the obvious treatment. They're interested in helping their patients avoid more serious problems down the road. Third-generation dentists have invested a lot in themselves and their practice in order to know how to deliver the highest end of cosmetic dentistry. They diagnose based on comprehensive approaches and treat every patient as a cosmetic case. They expect patients to want what they as the practitioner know how to provide, and they pride themselves in being the high-end provider in their market. Fourth-generation dentists see themselves as the physician of the mouth. They first seek to meet the patient where the patient is, trying to understand the patient's ideal dental IQ, their perceived needs, and what they really want. They're flexible to adapt to every patient's situation, and they work to take patients from where they are to where they need to be over time. They constantly work on patient service systems to make the experience one where patients will be compelled to repeat and refer. They understand that what is right for the patient is right for the practice. Clinically, they take a very comprehensive approach to diagnose periodontal issues, restorative needs, function, and appearance, being sure that it's presented in a way that will interest the patient because they've diagnosed the patient's interests first. The patient, the practice, and the practitioner. All three tend to gravitate to one of the four quadrants of patient care. It starts, however, with the dentist. The dentist creates the type of practice that, over time, attracts the patient that is aligned with the philosophy of care that's delivered by the dentist in that practice. It starts with a personal, conscious decision as to what type of dentist you want to be and what type of practice you want to have. So which type of patient do you find yourself treating the most? First, second, third, or fourth generation? What type of dentist do you find yourself being? What type of practice do you have, and what type of practice do you want to have? All of these are questions that every dentist needs to continually ask and keep asking, and then action plan and execute on that action plan. The goal of the Crown Council is to provide the support and the management resources to help you and your team on your journey to being the dentist and the practice that you want to be, to help you create a culture of success in your practice that will allow you to constantly improve and deliver on a philosophy of care that you've decided to provide. That's a continuing process, not an event. Our goal at the Total Patient Service Institute is to help you define and refine that direction, and then help you implement the specific systems you need to get where you want to go. It's our hands-on approach that helps take the practice to the next level. No matter where you are, we hope you'll take advantage of all the resources available through the Crown Council and the Total Patient Service Institute to continually improve your practice no matter where it is today and no matter where you want to take it. From all of us at the Total Patient Service Institute and the Crown Council, thanks for making us part of your journey of success through the four generations of patient care.